Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
What role does science play in modern life and education? Does America need a more focused scientific agenda? What role does the public play? Let's go in depth with Mark Putnam, president of Central College, Pella. Mark, you've been talking and writing a lot about science and the role of science in society. Could you share some of your thoughts with us today?
I was reminded recently when President Obama was using the Sputnik moment reference, when that satellite began to circle the Earth so many years ago, and it was a signal of a new age that was ahead of us. And as a nation, when you look back historically at the response that grew from that, it was a mobilization of an entire country. It was manifested in the kind of labs that were constructed both in industry and in higher education, the national laboratory process that grew across the country, focused on specific areas of science and technology and engineering and math, the research institutes and research councils that were developed in that period. And there was a very conscious decision on the part of the federal government to invest in what has typically been called basic or pure research. That is research that doesn't necessarily have a translational impact right away, but something that's going to advance our knowledge of science. And where we have interest on the part of faculty members in our universities and colleges around the country or in industry, they historically have been in taking risks around very elemental building blocks, where whether it's materials research in physics or it's a pharmaceutical research that's at the very base level of pharmaceutical chemistry or pharmacology. Those things have yielded over all of these years since that time immense impacts on society, where those discoveries have led to technology transfer opportunities that have redefined modern life. And you can bring that to computer technology and the internet, to therapeutics in what we see in the pharmaceutical industry, and we see it in physics with the emergence of nanotechnology. The most important thing to me is that the mobilization is what made it possible. Resources flowed, energy was committed, attention was drawn. The nation's thinking, all the way to the space program, grew out of this sense of urgency and importance. And I think that's different now than it was then.
Different how?
Well, in the sense that when you see where people put their time and money, you have a pretty good indication of what they value. I've always said that if you look at someone's checkbook register and their calendar, you can pretty much know what the value structure of their lives is about. And in this way, if you look at where we put time and energy as a country, as a result of the political process that we all participate in, then we begin to emphasize certain things over others. And now when we see the funding streams around science and technology and engineering and math, on one hand, we hear the outcry of our young people are not well prepared. Or what I wrote about recently in the blog is, as an adult, how much am I really absorbing about scientific knowledge and literacy that's going to help me be an informed citizen? And we speak of that openly, and at the same time, we begin to act in ways where our resource commitments in the federal budget, our resource commitments in state budgets, the amount of R&D, that is research and development money that's being set aside, is diminishing. And if we understand that to be investments in the future, the way the previous generation did, going back 50 or 60 years, are we, in fact, building the knowledge base, the literacy, the understanding, the commitment, the funding streams, the infrastructure that will ensure that we are on the cutting edge of science and technology in the future?
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about America's scientific agenda with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. In listening to you speak, I'm sitting here thinking of that. I'm old enough to remember that Sputnik challenge, that when the whole country rallied around that challenge and we were all committed to it. And it was a very exciting time. But there's nothing like that now. I mean, we're excited with a new cell phone. We're passive, or correct me if I'm wrong, if your opinion is different, but we seem to be passive consumers rather than active participants in embracing the challenges of science. Is that correct?
Yeah, and a way of thinking about it at a bit more conceptual level is to say, what is a public good and what is a private good? When you think about the Sputnik moment and the rallying of a nation, all of this was determined to be in the service of the public interest, that there's a public trust we are seeking to uphold. And we defined the centrality of the government's responsibility and our organization's responsibilities in support of that to say, this serves the nation. And we commit these resources, time, energy, money, to go toward our future success, to say we're working for our successors. So we sit here today in 2011 and benefit from the lives and dedication and commitment of people who lived and died in service of our interests now. Are we doing that on behalf of future generations, people who have not been born yet, but will benefit or not from the commitments that we make? The private interest says, I want it here and now. Either I benefit from this technology and this service in my life or in this moment, but not necessarily the sense of stewardship that says the public good is more important than the private good.
So what is our Sputnik challenge now, and are we paying any attention to it?
I don't think there's a coherence of interest that has been established in the national dialogue. Yes, there was the event of this satellite which appeared and felt threatening to a generation of people in the Cold War era and following World War II. So is there that kind of galvanizing piece? I don't think so in this moment. But is it also necessary? We know enough in our own understanding of the challenges globally to say that we can define a Sputnik moment for ourselves without having to have it forced on us in order to be responsive to things. And when you see now immense competitiveness that exists globally, and that is part of our own economic future, of course, we begin to ask ourselves the question, are we well positioned with the human genome? Are we well positioned with particle physics? Are we well positioned in nanotechnology and materials science? Now, these are things that are pretty esoteric for most people. But the applications, the translations of previous research that we benefit from now are sitting in our cell phones.
Mm-hmm. And their cars.
And the pharmaceuticals that we have. And so does it concern people when we hear the pharma industry saying we don't have the new therapeutics in the pipeline because it takes so many years to develop such a commitment of basic chemistry to understand what's happening or the way we're understanding antibiotics and the work of biologists? Are we really building that in? Well, at the moment, why are pharma companies merging? It's because there isn't enough intellectual capital.
The pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
There's not enough intellectual capital.
Correct. And so when you see the acquisitions and mergers that are occurring, and you see the reports, if you read anything about it, you know, when you hear Pfizer say that there's a concern about what's in the pipeline, because they're looking 20 years down the road. What are they learning right now in the pharma industry that is making it possible for them to continue in the developmental path for fit therapeutics that we will need down the road? You know, antibiotics is a great example because when you look at antibiotics, we gradually build up resistance to these things. And so what are we doing now that is helping us to develop more of these? The fundamental building blocks, if you study this, that have informed the drug discovery and delivery of this generation has been relying on a lot of the same basic elements. Are we really advancing so that future generations will have a greater possibility of the kind of therapeutic solutions that they will need at that time?
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about America's scientific agenda with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. Well, is the American public getting the messages that are out there, or are they ignoring them? Are they not being conveyed adequately? Why is this happening?
Well, one of the things I said in the blog recently is complexity makes it a little bit tough. And I think there's this mystifying quality around the expanding body of knowledge in science that we all struggle with. And I'm working hard to keep up from the chair of the college president of where are all these academic disciplines going. And so I have to study just to maintain some backdrop there. But I think the complexity alone is a factor. The other part of it is that I think there has to be an elevation of discourse that is not about my personal private need right now, but what defines the public good. And where we have new discoveries to support, if I were to be able to articulate the long-term benefits and impacts to people, would they step up for it? Well, you know, to take the analog now of Social Security, Medicare, as the debate around these things continues to emerge. I think the analysts would tell us that there is a future that is problematic. However you want to define that. Are we as a nation prepared to step up and say we have to take action sooner rather than later in order to preserve what the public good is at that time? Or is it the immediate private interest that we're going to pursue? Maybe that means that we have to think about our underlying value structure as a country and what it is that we're committed to in terms of future success.
Well, a lot of it that I see in the media and in people that I know and respect are a lot of people aren't driven by science, but they're driven by political ideology mm-hmm. on whatever side, and that the facts that science present are relatively unimportant on the world stage. Do you disagree with that?
Oh, I think that's a fair characterization. What is happening now is that this is a question of priorities. And as a nation, what is it that we will prioritize? And of course, there's a point at which the priorities will be handed to us, that choice will become less and less available to us in the years to come, given the investments that we know that we have to make and commitments already in hand. What I think we can't lose sight of is the present moment and the future need. The way we think about that in higher education, for example, is around an endowment. An endowment is in part present to serve the programmatic needs that we have now, this year, and next year. But we also talk about what's called intergenerational equity. And as those generations shift, the fiduciary responsibility of the trustees of the institution is to ensure that there is intergenerational equity in the future. So now if you apply the same model to our nation now and our government leaders, then what you would say is, are we providing intergenerational equity in knowledge gain, in intellectual capital, and in the flow of scientific discovery that will enable that future to be successful?
And we're not doing it.
I'm concerned.
Okay, so do you have a prescription for how we might be able to accomplish that?
Well, remember what happened even in the post-Sputnik era when JFK uttered the simple phrase, a man on the moon by the end of the decade. It clarified purpose. It wasn't about a specific piece of technology, but it was an inspiration that focused time and energy and money. It was a man, not a monkey, on the moon, not near the moon, by the end of the decade, not someday we hope. And the specificity of that statement caused us, I think, to say that what we were going to do in space was a worthy endeavor. And we all can talk about the various things that we've benefited from as a society that were byproducts of the space program, and despite a significant national investment in that, that now, of course, is about to end with the last shuttle mission going and the public good becoming the private good. What's the future of space travel as they're looking at it? Well, it's commercial. that you'd be able to buy a ticket to ride around the Earth and going into the commercial business of delivering payloads to the space station, that we begin to outsource that more and more. Maybe it's the right time to do that for that piece of this work. But should the government entirely step away from a responsibility there? The same is true of the oceans. If only private investment opens up these territories to us, the discoveries at the nano level, the discoveries in the human genome, the discoveries in the bases of the ocean, the discoveries in space, if those are only privately funded, then we may miss something. So what's our next horizon? What's the next man on the moon by the end of the decade? Our national leaders, I think, have to step forward and help us build that call.
Well, I think it would be great if our national leaders did that. And I'm not a cynic, but I'm a little skeptical with respect to the response. I don't think it matters if it's we're to the point, and you disagree if you do, we're to the point where I think that whether it's a Republican or a Democratic leadership that says something, doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter how good it is, the other side is going to pull it apart.
Clearly, we're in a period of time where the political discourse has been unraveling. So I can completely support that notion that we are at a time when our capacity to have these conversations has eroded significantly. My hope is that we can start to commit ourselves to a bigger idea. And when you think of something like a man on the moon by the end of the decade, it sets our sights on more than the next bill, more than the next budget cycle, more than this next initiative, and says, if we look at that horizon ahead of us, something that powerful, how do we align ourselves as a nation in service of that? To me, that's about inspiration. That what will get us there is not about political rhetoric, it's not about organizational effectiveness. It's not about even budgetary commitments of dollars. It's to say that human endeavor matters. And if we don't support human endeavor, we fail as a people.
Thanks to Mark Putnam for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.